This is WPKN in Bridgeport, and on the phone we have someone whose voice everyone listening has heard before, and we're going to talk about stuff that, well, I hope everyone's interested in, but everyone that's interested in radio, it's not the nerdy pursuit that you would expect. Glenn, are you there? Oh. Okay. Glenn, are you there?
Glenn. Yes, I am. Do you hear me?
I hear you now. Hi, Glenn. How are you?
I'm great.
All right. On the phone, we have Glenn Hauser, who is a... I wouldn't call you the world's most renowned shortwave listener, but you may be close. That may be close. People have enjoyed your program and your writing and your pursuit for many years, and we're going to talk shortwave today. And where do you live, Glenn?
I'm in Enid, Oklahoma.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you, how long have you been listening to shortwave?
Well, let's see. I started as a child when I was 9 years old or so. So that makes about 50 years.
All right, I got you beat on that, but all right. And what about it that obviously somebody had to help you? You didn't just fall into it by yourself. Was it something your father showed you, or who introduced you to it?
No, actually, I did pretty well discover it myself. I suppose I have Boy's Life, the Boy Scout magazine, to thank for sort of getting me going. Of course, the family already had an old multiband radio, a Philco console that did have shortwave bands on it, so that was already available. And then I saw an article in Boy's Life listing all the neat things you could pick up on shortwave. And I'd already been tuning around the radio to see what I could get on the AM band, and even on TV I was pulling in some far-off stations. So I was already set to get into shortwave.
So what is it about that excited you when you were a kid? So certainly not the same things that do now.
Well, there are different aspects of it. But, one is just the kick of pulling in a station directly on your own equipment from thousands of miles away, perhaps, the other side of the world, and knowing that, you know, there's nothing between you and the station except the ionosphere, which is bouncing the signal back.
Right.
And
did you know that that's what you were doing then, or you just turned in to just try to tune in voices from far away?
Well, I think I was aware of the basic mechanism that made it happen. Yes.
Right. What kind of radio did you have when you were a kid? What did you start? You had that Philco console.
Yeah, started with that. Then I stepped up, if you could put it that way, to a Hallicrafters S38E. Which was a rather low-priced but adequate shortwave radio of the time. I'm sure many other people are familiar with the Hallicrafters line.
Yeah, I had a Skyrider Junior, which was I guess a small kind of thing. But if you touched it, you got a nasty, nasty shock.
Yeah, this one had a hot chassis too. Furthermore, it would change the tuning slightly if you weren't careful just getting near it.
Right. I remember they had different headphone jacks. They didn't have the quarter inch jacks that they had today. It was a double pin, right?
Yep, had one of those too, and a very uncomfortable set of headphones with no padding.
We've got it easy today. We really got it easy listening to shortwave. But you know, what kinds of programs were available to listen back then? I mean, we're talking. You're a little bit older than I am, so I assume that you were listening in the late 50s.
At the beginning, I think I was pretty much interested in DXing, which is just actually picking up the stations and writing to them and getting a verification card and so forth. More than the program content.
Right.
However, that's. Although that's part of it still, as time goes on, most people, if they continue to listen, do so more and more for the programming. I do remember Radio Australia, although it's very far away, the signal being transequatorial, for reasons we may not need to go into, is much more reliable than Europe, for instance, from here in the middle of the U.S.
Right.
So every morning one can listen to Radio Australia and hear lots of news from the Pacific and future programs. And they even had programs, although they don't any longer, especially for shortwave listeners.
It was interesting, you know, there was not the world link that we have today. I mean, you can turn on your TV set and get the news from Australia, you can go on the internet, but the shortwave gave you a way to, it was the only way to communicate or to listen to find, see what's happening in other places. I was captivated by it.
Yes, me too.
What, are there any programs that stand out? Any specific programs or stations that stand out from that era?
Well, that is a long time ago.
Well,
I mentioned the DX programs, especially for shortwave listeners. I was really into those from Radio Australia and Radio Sweden calling DXers. They would give news of, you know, new schedules, frequencies, and so forth, which is what I've wound up doing for a lot of years now myself. The BBC World Service, or it was then it was known as the General Overseas Service, was very good for many programs of information about science and music, and a very good world news service too, as it still is today.
Yes. Were the stations then more? I know that the BBC, it was an international station, but were the originating stations located? Was it located in England? Did they have the relays that they have in later days?
I think the BBC had a few relays, but nothing like today, where there's really a worldwide network of relay sites for major stations, and many of them cooperate with each other. So chances are you aren't hearing a transmission direct from the home country.
Right. Which is different now than, more likely now than it was back then.
Yes, although if you refer to the references and know what you're doing, you can tell which is which, of course. But often reception is better via relay base in the Caribbean or somewhere closer.
Right, equatorial. What other? When I was tuning in I listened in the early '60s, and there was a wealth of stations. I used to, my favorite station was the, was there one called New York Worldwide? You ever recall that one?
Oh yes, Radio New York Worldwide, WNYW. It was previously it was WRUL, but it was operating out of Boston. And that was a very unusual thing for the time, a commercial shortwave station from the U.S. Most of them then and now are government or public sponsored, so they're not commercial.
Right. What? Why is that? I mean, is it legislation? Is it legislation that's not economically viable?
Well, it all depends on the individual country.
Right here in the U.S.
You know, in the U.S., there have been more and more private shortwave stations, although not many of them are really viable as commercial entities. Certainly, commercial broadcasting is permitted and encouraged in the U.S. on shortwave, but trouble is, shortwave is not rated, and no one has any idea of the exact number of people listening, and you can't really prove it to advertisers except for the direct response you may be getting. So
is it in terms of being viable commercially, it's just not it's not bankable.
I'm afraid not, although there are several stations which do operate on that basis, but they get more of their income just from selling time, brokering time to, you know, a half hour or whatever to various preachers or a few other programmers, rather than selling spots.
Now, that's, I think that people should be able to broadcast like that, but to me, the religious stations are a scourge of shortwave. That's all there is, it seems. I mean, domestically and worldwide, it's very prevalent.
Yes, there's an awful lot of that. Of course, they have motivation to proselytize and don't really care whether it's financially viable as long as they can have some other means of support.
Right, but
and the few U.S. stations which are actually private, commercial, and are not owned by religious entities, it's fine. They still have to sell time to the preachers in order to make a go of it.
Right. It's a kind of a throwback to the older days of radio that persists today. You know, It's I don't find radio today on shortwave as exciting as it was during the Cold War. You know, to me that was exciting radio. It was instructional. There were divergent opinions. It seems to be lacking a little bit today.
Yes, well, I guess I'm willing to do without the Cold War if that's the price.
If you
really want that, you can still listen to the Voice of Korea from Pyongyang, which is very, very strident and constantly talking about the dear leader and so forth. But not many of those left.
Right. Is it just the expense of it, the political climate? Why aren't? I mean, it seems like it's an economically viable way to reach people. But
well, more and more countries are deciding it isn't, or that there are other ways which are more viable, such as the internet.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they've been closing down shortwave services. That appears to be the trend, and there's not really any way to reverse it. Switzerland is one of the most recent, which was once had a very, very much appreciated international shortwave service, but they've been phasing it out the last few years, and they finally closed it down a few months ago.
That was a dynamite of a station. And Israel has also closed their shortwave broadcasts, or
they keep threatening to, but they've given an extension after extension. So who knows what's really going to happen? It's still going. The latest date when they may be closing it is the end of March. Same goes for Belgium.
Do you find it disappointing that this is a trend in shortwave broadcasting today?
Certainly.
What accounts for other means of broadcasting accounts for it? You know, well, broadcasting on the internet. It's not the same kind of structure. I mean, the more people you broadcast to on the internet, the more expensive it gets. On the radio, it doesn't cost any more to reach a larger audience. You know, more and more people can pick up. It doesn't cost you any more. Seems like an odd model to move into.
Right. Well, that point has to be driven over and over as different countries and the government bodies controlling them make the decisions about what they're going to do. Of course, there is a considerable capital expense in running shortwave transmitters. They eat up a lot of electricity, especially high-powered ones, which get through best. And you can't say that the Internet eats up a lot of electricity. But obviously, on shortwave, you have an unlimited audience.
Right, but we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
The other part of shortwave that doesn't get a lot of attention that I kind of had an interest in more recently than in the early 60s, because I didn't know what they were, these weird buzzing sounds and whistles and odd sounds. Some of them sound like a freight train. I never knew what those were back then, but today, with the ability to connect a computer device to your radio, you can uncode these stations. I guess they're the utilities.
Yes.
Is that an interest of yours?
No, it isn't really. I'm pretty well confined myself to broadcasting things that are actually intelligible without lots of decoding, although some people specialize in that and find it very fascinating.
You know, I get the facts on shortwave, and with the decline of listenable broadcast, that seemed to be a way to maintain the hobby without having to, you know, just shut off unplug the radio. But you have no interest in that, or minimal interest in that. It's not part of your DX.
That's correct. I've really never gotten into digital modes. It's somewhat interesting to me. It's just that I have so much else on my plate that, I really wouldn't say there's nothing to listen to, as you seem to be implying. There's still a great deal of broadcasting in many languages, lots of great music from many, if not all, countries in the world. If you go out and look for it.
So, there are a lot of very inexpensive shortwave radios available today. I think that when people buy these and, you know, plug them in and pull out the antenna, they may be disappointed, and, you know, they're not really that good to listen to. You know, the selectivity isn't good. It's a kind of a disappointment unless you have a good receiver and a way of, you know, you need a knowledge about it to You need knowledge to be able to listen to far distant radio stations.
That's true, and I'm sure a lot of people have been turned off by buying a $10 receiver or 15 at Walgreens, for instance.
Right.
Which may pick up a few stations of the stronger stations, but is really not even worth what they paid for it. But you know, if you're willing to spend maybe $100 and get a receiver with digital readout by a major maker such as Sanjian or Grundig, and inform yourself about schedules and how things work, why it's very rewarding.
I think you're right. You need to take a little bit. You need to take that step. It's a hobby that's very rewarding, and I don't mean to proclaim that it's dead, but it's much harder to find interesting things to listen to, at least for me, than in the older days when there were just so many powerhouse stations. You know, even the religious stations broadcast wonderful programs of non-related to religion. You know, I think what's that station in Ecuador, HCJB, broadcast wonderful music and radio programs. And I liked that if you wrote them notes, they responded. That I found remarkable.
Yes, well, HCJB in particular really has always been listener-friendly, shall we say, because they want to get you in and pray for you or whatever you may need.
Well, I don't mind other people praying for me, but you know, they offered a program that was interesting, you know, and they offer, you know, that's worth a lot.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, a couple of years ago, they cut back on their English broadcasts, although they still have quite a bit in Spanish. So you can still hear Ecuadorian music if you can find it on their Spanish service.
Right.
There's not much in English.
Well, that's you know, another shortwave disappointment for me. I wrote to a radio station in Brazil once. I'm not sure if it was Radio Brazil. It was a long time ago. But you know, I sent them a note saying I listened to your program, I liked it, and thank you very much. And they not only sent me back a card, they sent me back a three-page hand-typed, you know, letter. You know, which I thought was remarkable, because you would never get that sort of response from a commercial broadcaster. I mean, they really, I really felt that they appreciated their listeners. You know, that they take the time to respond. Have you found that similar?
Yeah, it all depends on the station and the situation. Possibly in that case, they didn't get a whole lot of reports, and when they did get one, they were so happy they wrote a three-page letter back. I can't see them doing that if they were getting a mailbox full every day. But yeah, if you try to contact stations, you may get some very satisfying responses like that, or sometimes you don't get any response.
Is that a part of now? What your the early days for you when you were writing to stations and getting the QSL cards and you had a dialogue with them? Was that more rewarding in the earlier days, or is that kind of slackened off today? Is that, I mean, that was an exciting part of listening to the shortwave, is the response from the stations.
Yes. Well, for me, partly because I got so busy with everything else, I just stopped trying to get QSLs a number of years ago, or, you know, writing to stations. Of course, now you can do it by email, so it's no big thing.
Right. So it's evolving as we speak. It's evolving. Talk a little bit about some of the. I know that your programs have been on the shortwave from many foreign. You've been broadcast from many foreign lands, but more recently you can be found at worldofradio.com. That's quite a transition.
Yes. Well, I have that's my website, and I make all my shows available in audio on demand. I have more than a year's worth archive, and as well as the latest one every week as soon as I finish it. And I think that's how WPKN gets it.
Yeah, yeah. I like the way your website is laid out with all text on the front page, and you can click into anything that you want to see. I think that's a really nice way of laying it out.
Yeah, well, I've always tried to keep it simple, because for one thing, there are a lot of blind people involved in listening to shortwave, and they can do without all the bells and whistles. I shouldn't put it that way. All the visual clutter.
Right.
And besides, I don't know that much about designing fancy web pages.
But you're great at list. You get an A in list. There was also some other things I noticed on your web on your website that I hadn't heard before. What's the continent of media?
Well, that is an extra program I do about once a month. It's similar to World Radio, but it's on a different set of stations, or actually very few stations, but it's available on the web. I just have so much material, more than I can cram in, even as fast as I talk and as briefly as I make the items, more than I can handle each week, so that's just some of the overflow, and the idea of it is to deal with items not so much about shortwave, but about media, other media in not only North America, but South America.
In terms of like political content, in terms of the actual broadcasts themselves, is that what the intent is for that?
Oh, it's anything that strikes my fancy. I don't actually run clips, very seldom anyway, if that's what you mean, but just news about, background news about broadcasting-related developments.
So in other words, if a station's going to be leaving the air, or more like news,
yes.
News rather than a list of what you can listen to, more about, more detail.
Right. I have fewer stories in greater depth on that usually. Just all kinds of odds and ends that I think are other people would like to hear about.
Right. And your website also is a wonderful radio resource. I mean, there's a lot of depth to the list. You can really.
Yes, you can do a search on there and probably find something about just about any country or station that's on the air. Or that has been since in the last few years.
Right. So in terms of listening to the radio on the internet, is that something that interests you at all? Is that something that you've explored? I mean, as a sort of an outlet?
Yes, I'm afraid I must confess that I do listen quite a bit to the radio on the internet. Just like everyone else, I enjoy getting a clear signal, and the shortwave signals aren't always clear. But that doesn't mean Well, as I put it in one of my remarks, the true shortwave sound, in some cases you could hear a station either on the internet or on shortwave, and it's not quite the same when there's no fading and no distortion.
Isn't that funny? That's what you're
saying at the beginning. If there is a little fading and distortion, you'll know it's coming directly. There's not all this stuff in between that could be interrupted.
Right. I used to find it disturbing that you don't listen to the static in that, but the exciting part is you can hear things from so far away, and someone with a different idea, and you know, from the other side of the globe, maybe even another planet. I find that exciting.
Yes. Well, of course, Jupiter puts out a bit of buzzing noise, which is the around 20 megahertz.
So
of course, it doesn't carry any intelligence that we know of.
Well, that we know of, but who knows? So you're not in terms of natural phenomena. If you DX'd other planets, or is that just something that you're in the know of about Jupiter rate propagating, radio signals?
Well, that's about it. Of course, you need a much bigger antenna than I have to pull in space probes and other. Things in the realm of radio astronomy.
Right. It's a fascinating, it really is. But I like the internet because you have the capability of connecting to radio observatories that might be able to supply some of the data streams or some of their interpretations of what is in that. And it's also quickly available. SETI and the NASA websites are all, fascinating sources of information. It's like having a NASA radio station. I find that part of it very exciting. Have you ever pursued ham radio as an outlet?
No. Once again, that's another thing I've passed up. Although I could have, and people are always asking me, but I'm so busy listening, I just feel I don't want to take time talking any more than I do for the programs I produce.
Right, well, that dialogue is important. I mean, you're producing radio programs, and you're reproducing programs that are of great benefit to people that want to listen to these stations. They depend on you. I mean, before you were around, I had to, I belonged to a, I even remember, I was my shortwave designation was WPE1HPX. That was my, I guess it was a Popular Electronics or White's radio log thing.
And that was Poptronics that did that.
Long time ago.
Yes, so you can have a call sign sort of like a ham, but not really a ham.
Right. But it was exciting because it identified me. Not that it really mattered. But the program. So you've really taken a different step from being just a passive listener, is what I was trying to get at. Have you always been proactive in what you listen to, and announcing it and letting other people know? At what point did that become important for you?
Yeah, it was not long after I got started. I guess when I was a teenager, I got involved with contributing DX News to existing programs, and then doing some little reports of my own. I liked to be on the air, and I've done it in various ways on various stations ever since.
Right, yes. And the primary source of your program right now is on shortwave, or is it on the from your own website?
Not quite sure what you mean.
In other words, your program is available through many stations, but it's also available on your website.
Yes.
Where do you think most people are getting you as a resource today?
Hmm.
You also have a column in
Monitoring Times.
Monitoring Times. That's right.
Yes, that's a monthly compilation with the usual delays, although less than other magazines. It gets out fairly quickly for a monthly magazine. But this information is all very perishable, and there's new stuff coming in all the time, so that's why I put out my own bulletin, electronic bulletin, DX Listening Digest, every day or two, which is really full of info. And then I boil that down to put on the program and to... for my other writing projects like Monitoring Times.
Is Monitoring Times a good resource?
Oh, yes. And my column is just three pages. It's they have many other columnists dealing with other aspects of radio.
Right. No, I was I subscribed for many years to Popular Communications. I liked that. It wasn't an alternative. It was just kind of in a publication in more of a style that I liked. It was, but it was nice to see. It's nice to see your column published in a print magazine. You would think that a magazine like that would not have, be able to not timely enough. In other words, the information that you supply is a month or two down the pike by the time it hits the newsstands.
Yes, that is a drawback. But it does reach a lot of people who might not otherwise be reached. And, much of it does hold up. For instance, most shortwave stations make schedule changes twice a year. So the info published at the beginning of the season is still more or less valid for 3 or 4 months.
I used to look forward to getting something called White's Radio Log. Do you remember know what that was?
Oh, yes, I did too. That was, I think, primarily for AM stations, a list of all the stations in the U.S. or in North America. But I guess they also had a shortwave list.
Right.
As I recall, it wasn't very detailed.
Was that kind of an inspiration? Was that before you started publishing lists and reports? Was that kind of an inspiration for what you do? I see it as similar.
Well, I guess I can't say that exactly. I think they've been gone for a long time now.
Right, I know. Well, someone had to pick up the ball, right?
Yeah, well, I did a column in Popular Electronics myself for a number of years, much like the one I do now for Monitoring Times. It's a country-by-country listing of schedules and loggings and so forth.
Yeah, the ones that I always looked for were the ones that were the English language broadcast to North America. That's the ones that I seeked. But
yes, All Monitoring Time still has a very detailed schedule, a minute-by-minute schedule of latest info on those broadcasts, which someone else handles.
Right. So for the latest in what to listen to on shortwave, we should check out your website.
Yes, indeed.
And
it's worldofradio.com.
Now, I typed in glennhauser.com. And what do you think I got?
I hesitate to think about it, but
it was one of those not a domain name for sale, but a search tool popped up. It was either a Google or a BraveNet search tool popped up, and then at the bottom, right under it, it was like a half a screen a page. It said, "Glenn Hauser is great."
Oh, that sounds like the Googleism.
Is it? What is that?
I'm not quite sure, but somebody once sent it to me. Something Google has, you put in a name and you get a bunch of comments about it. Was that all it said? That the one I saw had a bunch of other things more or less correct about what I've done?
No, this one, if you type in glennhauser.com, you get a BraveNet sort of search tool, and then at the bottom of the screen it says Glenn Hauser is great. I thought that was, if they're talking about you, I thought that was a nice... I get a nice compliment, kind of a weird compliment, but a nice one nonetheless.
Yes. Well, I hesitate to think that was really about me. Maybe they do that for anybody, but.
I did a Who Is since to see who owned it, and some guy named Glenn Hauser owns it.
Hmm.
So.
Well, I have run into a few other people, namesakes, who have nothing to do with what I do.
Yes. Can we talk about TV? DX for a few minutes?
Sure.
What was that the first type of distance listening that you were doing?
Like I said, it started about the same time as DXing the AM band. See, I was in a little town in New Mexico, really too far from the nearest TV station, Santa Rosa, which is over 100 miles from Albuquerque.
Right.
So in 1954, we got our first TV set and put an antenna on the roof, and hoping to get Albuquerque, but it was in the summer, and we were getting skip from stations a lot further than Albuquerque part of the time, coming in with much stronger signals. So I was really hooked on that for a while.
So maybe like fine-tuning the antenna or grounding it, putting a better ground on it, or using better cables, was that part of the what you had to do to get better stations?
Not for this. This just happens. It's something that goes... And the E-layer of the ionosphere just goes wacky in the summer and starts bouncing signals all over the place. So you can even get it just with rabbit ears, get some of them.
Right.
It's not so much a matter of improving your equipment, but there are other means of TV DX propagation where you do need to get as much gain and get up as high as possible and so forth with the best equipment.
Is that something that's possible with today's TV?
Oh, sure. Many people are still involved in that, and I am more casually than I once was, but it's fun to pick up TV stations from 1,000 miles away or whatever.
It's got to be a rare occurrence, though, because there's so many... Well, I guess around here it would be a rare occurrence, because we're in a megalopolis of broadcast.
Yes, you do need to have some relatively open channels, so and the lower ones are better for the greater distances, so you have New York and Hartford and everything... pretty well filling up the dial, plus all these new digital channels, which occupy even more channels.
Right.
It can be DX too. Some people are doing that.
I used to be able to pick up television stations. I live in Connecticut. I used to be able to pick up stations in Philadelphia, on rare occasions, which I thought was phenomenal.
Yeah, that would be, it's relatively close due to weather conditions, inversions and so forth.
There's one more question I wanted to ask you about shortwave, since you're the world-renowned expert. So if somebody has a simple shortwave radio, the Grundig or it's just a good quality shortwave radio, what do they need to do to it to be able to hear some of the great broadcasts that are still on shortwave?
probably need an external antenna. The radio ought to have a jack to hook up a wire to get you a bit more gain, but you don't want to overdo it because it may overload the receiver. That can make quite a bit of difference. Depends on what you mean by great stations.
Well, I mean, you obviously are able to hear some stations. You obviously have a knowledge and the ability to sort it out. You know, someone who just, you know, buys a radio doesn't have that ability. You know, they need to put up an external antenna. They need to figure out what kind of antenna they need. I mean, I live near the highway, so I get, you know, ignition noise, which is horrible.
Yeah.
And it's, the area I live in is a radio nightmare.
Yeah, there's some things you can do to mitigate that, but the best thing to do is to move out in the country.
Yeah.
Not near any high voltage power lines either.
We have those, but you know, what would someone with a simple radio, what would they need to do to be able to enjoy the hobby, you know, aside from just having the radio? Because I think by itself that could be disappointing. Don't you need, I think you need an antenna.
Well, beyond that, I really don't see how it's such a problem. Part of the fun of it is just tuning around at random and seeing what you can pick up.
I see.
And, you know, whether you can identify it all at the outset, that's always been a lot of the fun for me, and I still do random tuning, and that's how I uncover new stuff. And, you know, just see what you can pick up. Unless you're in a very high noise environment, you should be able to hear all kinds of interesting stuff. Last night, for instance, before going to bed, I was listening to Mexico City on 6185 with some really nice music, some ballads sung in Spanish. Of course, that's not too far away, but it comes in much better than anything I could get on Mexico on the AM band, for instance.
Right, that would be fun. I've been listening recently to in the last few years to Ships at Sea. You know, I'm not sure what the story is. There was a guy in the Caribbean who used to, I guess he was he made himself available to Ships at Sea as sort of a radio beacon. He would talk to people. He would give people weather reports. I thought it was kind of an odd thing, but listening to captains navigating, listening to them calling into their shore stations for, you know, support and information, I thought was were fascinating broadcasts. Have you ever listened to that kind of stuff?
Yes. I think this guy's still doing it. I believe he moved to Ontario, but he's still doing weather. If you're thinking of the same one, it's actually not so much for commercial vessels, but for yachts and sailboats and so forth.
Right. I thought that was a fascinating use of... was he a ham radio operator to do that, or was he it wasn't a maritime station. I thought was odd about it.
Well, I think he was lost in his license, but not as a ham. He's operating on the maritime bands, so... Although it's a certain overlap, he may be a ham as well. There are nets all over the ham bands dealing with these things. I was listening to one a while ago for yachters and sailors around Baja California, which is very interesting. Another guy giving all kinds of detailed weather info.
Right. Well, that's kind of an interesting, you know, it's sort of like having a community radio station. You're really supplying helpful information to people that need it.
Right, and of course that is two-way, so you can ask questions back and forth. I guess we should point out that most of this is on a single sideband, which requires a certain type of receiver. Not all of the cheap ones can pick that up properly.
Right, right. I had a Drake, which was really nice, and a SW8, which is a beautiful radio for listening to that. It just locks in, and I missed that gentleman in the Caribbean. I don't know his name, but it was fascinating to hear his reports and helpful, interesting broadcasts were the captains at sea talking to their, I guess, the companies that own them, and their, as they traverse the world. It's really, these captains were remarkable in their ingenuity to keep things going, where they needed to go to port, and you could listen to all these conversations with relative ease. I'm not sure if they're still there or not. This is maybe 7-8 years ago. They may have gone to satellite or more encrypted.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's the trend. There may be still some of that, but less and less as time goes on.
I remember hearing some captain talking about he had a fuel leak, and he could only pull into certain ports because certain ports would, if you have a fuel leak, you'll be required to make repairs. But what he did is he took the I guess it was his, he was venting fuel into the double hull, and then he would take a pump and he would pump the fuel back into the tank. So, you know, en route, he solved his own, and he was a very resourceful gentleman. But, you know, just the idea of that I could listen to a telephone conversation that he's having with other people was kind of remarkable and acceptable.
Although there are certain rules that you're not supposed to repeat any details of what you hear in such private conversations or...
Now, did I just break a rule? Now, that someone asked me that once about listening to the utilities and listening to police and listening to the do you know what the rules are as far as what you're allowed to do? Certainly not rebroadcast them.
Right. You're not supposed to benefit or make any make them public, shall we say.
Right.
So, you know, I wouldn't really give anything in great detail, but speaking in generalities like you did, I'm sure there shouldn't be anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I find I listened to those programs a few, those sorts of broadcasts a few years ago, but nothing recently. You know, I haven't, I mostly DX AM radio at night. And it's, you know, it's not great because it's all the same stuff. You know, from the faraway stations are broadcasting the same thing as the near stations.
Yes, I'm afraid that's one reason I've sort of lost interest in DXing medium wave or AM and also FM. I used to do a lot of FM DXing, but even if it's an interesting station or a distant station that I've never heard before, it probably sound just like any other station, so why bother?
Yeah. So you look for uniqueness. That's part of the content. That's important to me too. Glenn, thank you for spending. I guess we were on the phone about half an hour, 40 minutes. Thank you very much for talking about shortwave. Maybe we can do it again sometime.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Shall we remind people about when they can hear World of Radio?
Yes. When can people hear World of Radio?
Well, I understand it's now Tuesdays at 2 a.m. on WPKN.
That's not the most convenient time to listen to the World Radio. I'm kind of disappointed that it moved to so late, but at least it's on the air, you know, and that will persist.
And people can check my website. I have a page which gives an hour-by-hour schedule of all the stations it's on, shortwave and otherwise, and webcasting, so lots of other choices.
I think that's what this new age has brought us, more choices. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it certainly makes it easier. And I am so happy that your lists are available and widely distributed, you know, via the internet or via any many places on the shortwave radio.
I'm glad to hear you say that. This is more or less a labor of love, and I always enjoy getting a positive response.
Yes, and you know, when I talk to people who, you know, listen to the radio, and I have a lot of very nerdy friends who they say that they love the World of Radio. It's the only program left on the radio for nerds. They mean that with sincerity. You know, not you know, kind of a joke, but no.
Dave, I've really enjoyed talking to you.
All right, great, and we'll talk to you again soon. All right, take care, Glenn.
You do.
All right, there you go. Glenn Hauser from Oklahoma, one of the leading authorities on shortwave radio. It sounded like he was talking on a shortwave radio miserable phone call. The quality of the phone call was not the greatest, but what can you do? It's telephonics. This is WPKN in Bridgeport, and... I'm not sure what I've got next. Let's see what this is.